The River Thames runs through London. It's the center of many postcard photos of the city. Today, its banks are filled with locals and tourists in busy shops and restaurants. In the past, it served as crucial transport for goods and food entering and exiting the city. In this episode, we turn to one unexpected culinary contribution that the river offers to today's food system: invasive crayfish. Welcome to Feed, a food systems podcast presented by Table. I'm Matthew Kessler. We're continuing our series, asking if we could eat our way outside of a particular problem. Can we introduce something delicious to our plates, while at the same time improving the surrounding ecosystems? In a second, I'll turn the microphone over to my colleague at Table, Jackie Turner, who will tell the story of how the invasive American signal crayfish ended up in the River Thames, and whether eating it is a promising solution. To get to the bottom of this, Jackie spoke to Bob Ring, one of the few remaining crayfish trappers in the United Kingdom. Bob started his business more than a decade ago, seeing an opportunity to help the environment, which he cares deeply about, and to make a profit. Along his journey, Bob has found some unexpected common ground with some of the people he sold crayfish to.
I'd had various vegetarians say to me, over all the reasons why they were a vegetarian, none of the reasons kind of stopped them, in theory, from eating the crayfish. They're invasive species, they've got to be killed by law, they weren't farmed, you know, we need to get rid of them.
I think there are lots of people who would describe themselves as having convictions about nature and how best to protect it. Bob Ring, who you've just heard from, got into crayfish trapping as a way to remove invasive species from threatened waterways. But the thing about fishing around in muddy waters is other things end up tangled in your net. I meet Bob Ring outside an Asda in South London, where he's just picked up some breakfast.
You got two hash browns?
Yeah, tend to live on discounts. I figure it saves me a good £100 a week.
Wow.
I would think something
food,
like that.
Yeah.
I've known Bob for years, but this is our first time meeting in person. Ever since I found out that there was a man who called himself Crayfish Bob trapping invasive crustaceans in London's waterways and selling them to restaurants, I knew I had to meet him. But after years and many hours of phone calls, if there's one thing I've learned chasing this story, it's that, much like the waterways Bob navigates, the rules that govern what is natural or native and what can be done with it, it gets murky quick.
Okay. All right.
Bob and I walk to his car, where he pulls a binder out of the back seat, and it's as thick as an encyclopedia.
What are we looking at here?
This is my, this is some of the laws. In there, I carry them around with me. Anyway,
Bob is obsessed, and reasonably so, with the regulations that govern the trapping of crayfish.
This is your application for a trap license, right? It used to be that it was just for a trap. According to this, you know, you've got to apply to take a crayfish out with your hand. Well, according to that also, you'd have to put a little tag, license tag on either hand, and they apply for two or one. It's a bit petty. I'm very inclined to apply for three hands.
In his binder, Bob has a list of invasive species in the UK.
We are 23 animals and 14 plants on the list of union concern. Grey squirrels, fox squirrel, you see, that's not a widespread one. There's the signal crayfish. The virile crayfish. Well, yes.
While we're talking, Bob gets a call.
Just find out. Hello.
Hello, can I know if you have any crayfish for sale?
No, I'm sorry, I don't at the moment. Where are you?
Leeds.
Leeds, yeah, I can't help you up there, I'm afraid. I'm sorry. Thank you. Bye-bye. I mean, I could. It's such a hassle. It's that goes off all day bloody long, right?
Okay.
Okay.
And it just starts with that. Do you have any crayfish for sale?
Yeah, that's it. Have you got any crayfish for sale at the moment? No, I said, although we've got tankfuls of them. And where are you, Leeds? Well, you know, I know. Well, where that's going to go is me having to then explain, I'm sorry, I can't do them live, without bothering to go into, well, I could if they were Turkish, but they're hard to get, so I can't do any live.
What Bob is referencing here is that he can catch a species of crayfish called Turkish crayfish that aren't native, but also aren't on that official list we were just looking at, which means different rules apply to them that allow him to transport them live. This is all in that binder of rules that lives in Bob's backseat. Bob has agreed to take me with him to a lake in South London to show me how crayfish trapping works. On the way, he fills me in on the history of how non-native crayfish species arrived in the UK. The story actually starts in Sweden, where crayfish are a popular delicacy, especially in the summer months. Originally, Sweden had a native population of crayfish that satisfied this craving, a species called the noble crayfish. But these crayfish started dying out from a crayfish plague. So in the 1960s, Sweden introduced the American signal crayfish.
And the great news is, unlike our noble crayfish, said the Swedes, these things are immune to the crayfish plague. So hey, let's get some and put them in our waters, which they did. And so they had them all over Sweden, and then they persuaded British government to bring some over here to farm.
That's right. The Swedish government actually talked the British government into introducing an American crayfish species to be farmed in the UK so that they could be exported to Sweden. Like so many intentional non-native species introductions, this probably goes in the direction you'd expect.
Soon after they'd come over in 76, somebody realized, hang on a minute, yeah, they're immune to the plague, but they carry it. So they did. They basically, in Sweden and over here, introduced a whole load of plague-carrying crayfish to our waters, which, of course, therefore wipe out the non-American, like the white clawed that's here and like the Turkish crayfish, basically.
The white claw crayfish is the native crayfish species that is rapidly disappearing from the UK from a combination of habitat loss, disease, and being outcompeted by the American signal crayfish.
And there's always an argument that says, well, fine, you know, I mean, it's all natural. People bringing things and plonking them around, and everything we do as humans is nature, and everything... you know, and all of this, well, us trying to control it is nature as well, actually.
And this is really what drew me to Bob's work in the first place, these questions of nature and our place in it. Are invasive species natural? If we introduce them, do we have some responsibility to manage them? What if we could reduce their numbers through the natural process of eating? Should we? But more on that later. We've arrived at the lake.
Okay. So, Jackie, what we're going to do... I'm going to just cart, if you can help me with that one. We're going to cart the... just a few whatever traps we got. I have to check them all for holes. Tie bits of string on them and then discreetly chuck them into the water. We might come across the odd angler. I try and avoid them because they quite often want to chat. Other people also always want to chat. Slows the day down.
We've parked on a side street in a suburban neighborhood. The lake is inside a park surrounded by an iron fence. Every 30 meters or so, there's a gate that leads to a small wooden platform for anglers to use. It's a big enough body of water that there are sailboats drifting across it. And the path that goes around the lake is clearly popular with runners and dog walkers. Bob and I round up his buckets of gear from the car and set off to drop the baited traps in suitable spots along the edge of the lake. We'll come back on a different day to check them for crayfish. As we walk around the lake, I'm suddenly acutely aware that I had different expectations of what Bob's life as a trapper in London looked like. This isn't the Thames, and we're on foot.
You own a boat, right?
I do have several boats, yeah.
Where do you keep them?
Well, there's a couple at the bottom of lakes that need to be.
Keep them there so they're safe.
Yeah, that's safe. I know where they are. You know, I don't want anybody to nick it. So I find that's the best way, is to sink them.
Eventually, we reach the first spot, and Bob pulls a trap out of a bucket.
We're doing this for radio.
Uh-huh.
What does one of these traps look like?
Okay. Well, there's these weird engines on the side that are sort of steam coming out of them. It's sort of wire coil thing that spring open into a long cylinder covered in net with holes in either end through which the crayfish are invited to go when they get a whiff of the delectable bait that we're chucking in there. And once they've gone through the entrance, they find it pretty hard to get out. Unless I've left a hole in the trap somewhere, in which case they find it pretty easy. But I think we're good. Famous last words.
I'm not sure if it's the smell of the mackerel Bob is using to bait the traps, or that we're at a park where the local birds are used to being fed by humans, but within minutes of arriving, we're surrounded by the local waterfowl.
That's a proper baby coot. The proper two of them. Wow. Right, I'm going to chuck this out that way. Hope for the best. Okay, somehow, without falling in the lake, I find myself down here to discreetly tie the line off so that the trap doesn't go missing later.
The bank of the lake is thick with foliage, so Bob does an amount of climbing through trees and bushes that is perhaps unusual for someone turning 70 next year.
So you just have to crash through it, really. You'll know if it's anything bad because I'll start coming up with blood all over my arms.
It doesn't always go smoothly.
Oh, bugger! Right, that's clever, isn't it? Now I need a stick.
And with 15 traps to set, it takes a while. To check the traps on another day.
So the plan here is to literally sort of grab those buckets out of the bank, go round, we'll start at the very end where we sort of finished, pull in the traps, empty them out, fold them up, stick them in one bucket, and that's it, chuck them away, chuck hopefully a decent amount of crayfish in the bucket, in the bank, take them home again.
Right.
And job done.
The first few traps we pull up are empty.
No, just got nothing in it.
A bit unlucky.
Well, sort of. You never know. Bit strange, to be honest. Because, you know, another time we'd have come down and we could have expected to get loads of crayfish by now. We got sod all, really. Expected to have done better than that.
A few of the traps have a couple of crayfish in them.
Oh, we got one. Oh, fantastic.
That's a big one.
Yeah, bigger anyway, yeah. Okay, well, thank you for that, I suppose. That's a good one.
That's the sound of a crayfish trying to eject itself backwards. In the water, they can flip their tails to dart under rocks in the blink of an eye. On land and inside a bucket, not so effective. Crayfish here are bigger than I expected and bigger than the crayfish I grew up seeing in the Great Lakes area of the U.S. Some of them would easily fit in the palm of my hand, and others are as long as my shoe. Bob insists the ones we're seeing are on the smaller side. One trap comes up with a dozen or so crayfish in it.
How many are you getting in that trap just like that?
That's a lot.
Yeah, well, relative to what we've had in the others, it has been rubbish. Yeah. Come on, you lot. You Mrs. Crayfish.
Bob thinks one of the reasons there are fewer crayfish is that the lake is home to another invasive species that is slowly taking over.
And the Wells catfish, they've been introduced to this lake. They love crayfish for a start. I've noticed the population certainly dropped, but the trouble is eventually they'll have every fish and everything in there. It'll just be a lake full of giant catfish.
Like the American signal crayfish, the Wells catfish was also introduced to the UK in the 1970s, likely by anglers who admired its ability to grow quickly.
The anglers love them because they get big and because they're one of the, other than an eel, say, the only fish that swims backwards and actually pull backwards. So they love it for the sport.
These catfish will eat anything from crayfish to pigeons to Atlantic salmon. They can grow up to 10 feet long and weigh up to 600 pounds, or 270 kilos. But despite being a clearly harmful species to local ecosystems, the Wells catfish is not on the list of species that can't be put back.
And anglers, there's lots of them. And they have quite a big influence on the Environment Agency people, for example. And quite a big influence on government because there's so many anglers.
I ask Bob if he's thought of applying the same eat-our-way-out approach to catfish that he has to crayfish.
Yes, will there be a food market for them? Well, possibly. But to try and organize that one from scratch would be quite a thing.
Ultimately, some of the same barriers exist to making a food industry around Wells catfish as exist around crayfish. Like crayfish, catfish aren't popular cuisine here, so it's a niche food. I asked Bob what he would hope for if he could get investment.
You know, I wouldn't mind having some restaurant sort of hub things, well, invasive species hub centers across the country, where you can bring in, you concentrate exactly on that and getting rid of the invasives in the area and doing them out as food. And, you know, we've got the muntjac, we've got the crayfish, the squirrel, we've got the Egyptian gooses.
But one of the biggest flaws in this is obvious, right? How can you build a market around trying to wipe out an invasive species? You might be able to pay back an investment, but it's not a business model that will offer infinite growth opportunities. Bob can see how some companies might invest under some banner of sustainability or environmental awareness, but he doesn't like that either.
It matters to me a lot. I just hate greenwashing, basically. I could see, you know, it's so good. You can see it could go in a really, really positive direction. And you can see they love all the sort of eco bit and all of that, except they don't love it because for what it's all genuinely about. They love it simply for the potential of adding some profit to their business.
Bob sees one of his biggest obstacles as the binder of ever-changing laws and regulations that make his work even harder than tromping through dense foliage all day.
Try and build up some plans that are based on a set of laws and things, and then they all change. It's no good at all.
Bob wants to trap these invasives. He sees himself as doing a good thing and wishes the government saw it that way too. But he reckons, although there are some hobbyists out there, he is probably one of only three commercial crayfish trappers left in the UK, and the government isn't making his job any easier. The recent laws Bob's referring to came out in 2019, and since then, a large chunk of his business has shifted to being hired to remove crayfish from private ponds on estates and by angler clubs who don't want crayfish in their lakes. But that dream Bob had of fixing our mistakes by eating these introduced species, it's getting harder for him to picture it. A big thanks to Bob Ring for letting me tag along with him. This episode was edited and produced by me, Jackie Turner, with special thanks to Matthew Kessler and Tara Garnett at Table, as well as Rose Rimler, who listened to an early version of this episode. Music by William King and Blue Dot Sessions. I'm also working on a video about crayfish trapping based on my visits to the lake with Bob that will be out soon. In the meantime, you can find some photos of crayfish, Bob, and some hungry-looking waterfowl on our website, tabledebates.org/podcast. Next week, Feed will continue looking into this idea of eating the problems we caused. Matthew Kessler will be back talking to a conservation biologist about ways to keep the population of white-tailed deer in the forests of the eastern United States in check.